This is Progressive Radio, a weekly conversation hosted by Matthew Rothschild, editor of The Progressive Magazine, a leading voice for peace and social justice. For more information about Progressive Radio or The Progressive Magazine, log on to our website at progressive.org.
I'm Matt Rothschild, and welcome to Progressive Radio, which you can now download as a podcast on our website, progressive.org. Today, we're going to be talking about the safety of your food supply, especially as it relates to GMOs, that's genetically modified organisms. And with me to talk about the subject is Jeffrey Smith, the man who wrote the book about the subject. The book is called Seeds of Deception, Exposing Industry and Government Lies About the Safety of the Genetically Engineered Foods You're Eating. Jeffrey Smith, welcome to Progressive Radio.
Thank you, Matt.
Tell me how you got interested in the subject. Were you always interested in agriculture or food or the power of huge corporations?
About a decade ago, I went to a lecture and heard about the significant dangers associated with genetically engineered foods and crops. And I knew that most Americans and most people in the world had no idea, and that it was being slipped into our fields and into our food, and it had the potential to create an enormous catastrophe. And my background has been very much in terms of a communicator, a marketing, public relations, education, and I realized, knowing what I knew that had just been told to me, I felt a kind of responsibility to get it out. In the triage of environmental and health problems, genetic engineering looms very high, perhaps the most dangerous. And so I felt motivated to get involved. And so I started lecturing on the subject. I worked as a consultant for a group that tried to get the genetically modified foods labeled. I ran for U.S. Congress to raise the awareness of the health and environmental impacts. I worked at a GMO detection laboratory as vice president of marketing. And then I wrote the book because I knew that there was a lot of incriminating stories that had not yet made it into the public's awareness.
One thing that strikes me at the very beginning of this book is you talk about the strategy of the Monsanto company, which has cornered a lot of the market in this genetically modified food. And they were talking to some of their consultants and their own marketers about what their fantasy land looked like, what the world would be if they could dominate it. And one of the consultants said they wanted to make genetically modified food so common. They wanted to flood the market so much that people would just kind of surrender.
Right. And that's the impression that they like to give. They like to give the impression that this is the technology of the future. It's the technology of today. It's already out there, and there's nothing we can do about it. In fact, their plan, according to their consultant, was to genetically modify 100% of all commercial seeds within 15 to 20 years. And other biotech companies had similar projections. However, now only four major crops are genetically engineered: soy, corn, cotton, and canola. There's also Hawaiian papaya, a little bit of zucchini, a little bit of crookneck squash, but principally soy, corn, cotton, and canola. And there's also 99% of all the growth is in about four countries. So this is far short of what their plans were.
What happened?
Well, it was because of consumer concern. Studies show that the more people learn about genetically modified crops and food, the less they trust them. Now, Europe has a much more open press about this. And so, for example, there was one story that every European knows about, and that's there was a scientist in Scotland who was working on a UK government grant to determine the ideal testing protocol to determine if genetically modified foods were safe. So he ran that protocol with a genetically modified potato, and it turns out it caused significant damage to rats. They had smaller brains, livers, and testicles, partial atrophy of the liver, damaged immune system, potentially precancerous cell growth in their digestive tract. Well, he went public with his concerns, was a hero for about 2 days at his institute, and then allegedly two phone calls were made from the prime minister's office to the director of the institute, and the next morning the scientist was fired from his job after 35 years and silenced with threats of a lawsuit.
And so he was essentially gagged for about 6 months.
That's right, and he couldn't speak about it, and all sorts of misinformation went around the world to try and protect the reputation of the biotech industry. Eventually, he was invited to speak before Parliament. He got his data back, and now the research is published in The Lancet, and it's the most in-depth animal feeding study ever published on genetically modified foods. And it shows, more than anything else, that it's the process of genetic engineering that was the cause of the damage, not the particular trait that he engineered the potatoes to express, but the general process of genetic engineering. We know now from a recent study that when you insert a single gene into the DNA and grow it out in a tissue culture, you typically have hundreds or thousands of mutations all throughout the genome. You can have breakups, fragments, genes turned off permanently, genes turned on permanently, and very few side effects are actually tested. And so we really are the guinea pigs of this huge uncontrolled experiment.
And what are some of those consequences? I mean, it is in this food supply. I mean, corn, cotton,
right,
canola, and soy. I mean, soy, you got tofu, corn is everywhere. Cotton, people are wearing constantly. What consequences are we seeing?
Well, we're not looking. There's no monitoring. There's no tests on humans. In fact, there was only one human feeding study ever conducted, and it showed that the gene that was inserted into soy for genetically modified soy actually transferred into the DNA of gut bacteria. Which means even if you decide to never eat genetically modified soybeans again, it's possible that your own gut bacteria may be pumping out this foreign protein. Now, let's take soy. Soon after genetically modified soy was introduced to the UK diet, soy allergies skyrocketed there by 50%. We know that genetically modified soy has a dramatic increase in a known allergen called trypsin inhibitor. We know that it creates a protein by itself it's designed to create that has two sequences which are identical to known allergens. Now, this should have disqualified it from being a food, according to the World Health Organization, but not according to the U.S. government, which requires no safety testing whatsoever on genetically modified foods.
How can that be? How can they not require testing on safety of these GMOs?
Well, what happened was in 1992, the first Bush administration identified genetically modified foods as an opportunity to increase U.S. exports and dominance of the food industry. And so they put into place in the Food and Drug Administration the deputy commissioner in charge of policy, and they put a person in that position to oversee a development of a very pro-industry policy on genetically modified foods. The person happened to be Monsanto's former attorney. Monsanto is a biotech company. They have about 91% of all crops planted around the world. So their former attorney is in charge of the FDA policy, and he later became their vice president. And he claimed in the policy that the agency was not aware of any information showing that the foods differ in any meaningful or uniform way. And on that basis, he said, no testing is necessary for the Food and Drug Administration. Now, a lawsuit caused about 44,000 documents to be made public. And when you look at those documents, it turns out that the statement made in the policy is deceitful. In fact, the overwhelming consensus among the scientists at the Food and Drug Administration was that that genetically modified foods were inherently unsafe, that they could create allergies, toxins, new diseases, antibiotic-resistant diseases, and nutritional problems. They had urged their superiors to require tests, but the superior said no.
I'm Matt Rothschild. You're listening to Progressive Radio. I'm speaking with Jeffrey Smith, the author of Seeds of Deception, subtitle, Exposing Industry and Government Lies About the Safety of the Genetically Engineered Food That You're Eating. Now, you say about one of these foods, the Flavor Saver tomato, that actually there were FDA scientists and regulators who sent a memo up the chain in all capital letters that it would be a serious health hazard to approve this tomato, and the guy called it the tomato that ate Akron.
Right.
And still the tomato got the approval.
Got the approval, exactly. You see, they insert into genetically modified crops typically an antibiotic-resistant marker gene. And they use it just to determine which cells ended up getting the insertion correctly, but it stays in the food. And so they had asked the Division of Anti-Infective Drugs, what do you think of the use of these antibiotic-resistant marker genes? And they were appalled, as you pointed out. They were concerned that these genes might transfer to gut bacteria or to soil bacteria and cause a widespread resistant strains of bacteria resistant to antibiotics, super diseases. And so they claimed that this was a danger, and the biotech industry said, oh, no, it's not dangerous because all the genes are destroyed during digestion. They can never transfer to gut bacteria if they've been destroyed with digestive juices. And the biotech industry was able to convince the superiors, the political appointees at the FDA, and the FDA never checked to see whether this assumption was correct.
Was it correct?
No. In fact, the only human feeding study showed that it not only survived digestion, but that genetically modified DNA did get transferred to gut bacteria.
The other thing I liked about that story, Jeffrey, is that you had the manufacturer of the Flavor Saver tomato at some conference saying, here's a tomato picked yesterday, here's one picked 30 days ago, here's one picked 60 days ago, here's one picked 150 days ago, and this Flavor Saver bioengineered tomato, and they all looked identical.
Right.
And then a skeptical scientist in the audience says, well, if it's 150 days old, how can it have the same nutrients and enzymes that are positive for people? And he was whisked out of the room, basically.
He was taken out of the room, and the person said, we're not interested in nutrition. We're just interested to see if housewives will buy it after 180 days. That wasn't the Flavor Saver, actually. That was a different tomato that was also engineered for longer shelf life. Now, the Flavor Saver was the first genetically modified crop to be approved by the FDA and the first one to be commercialized. And it was the only one that submitted actual data from feeding trials. Now, there's a voluntary consultation process, and so companies just submit summary data that's usually very superficial. But this one actually submitted raw data, and the scientists pointed out at the FDA that several of these rats developed stomach lesions. It also turns out that 7 out of 40 died within 2 weeks and were replaced in the study, and the FDA approved the tomatoes over the objections of their own scientists.
Now, are those tomatoes still in the food supply?
No. There's no more genetically modified tomatoes available. They were taken off the market, supposedly for marketing reasons. There's no more potatoes. They were also taken because McDonald's rejected them, which is an interesting thing. So there's only soy, corn, cotton, and canola.
You don't think of McDonald's as a safeguard of our healthy food supply. But
right.
Maybe they didn't want to get hit with any negative publicity if something bad were to come out.
Right. You see, the thing is, what happened in Europe was, because of consumer concern, the manufacturers there committed to non-GM ingredients in the European brands. And so McDonald's in Europe does not serve genetically modified ingredients, but in the United States it does, because there's not a lot of awareness. Most Americans say that they've never eaten a genetically modified food in their lives, and yet most people here eat genetically modified foods in every meal, particularly because the soy and corn derivatives and vegetable oil made from either the soy, corn, cotton, or canola.
And how dangerous do you think it is, just for all of us who aren't paying attention? And also, it's not labeled either, for that matter.
Right, right. Well, it's like a gamble. It's like a crapshoot, because when you alter the DNA that way, you can create all sorts of metabolic changes and create overproduction of carcinogens or toxins or allergens. The animals that have been tested, there have been very few studies, like less than 20 peer-reviewed, published animal feeding studies on safety. And the ones that aren't conducted by industry are more revealing, of course, because industry studies appear to be rigged to avoid finding problems. And they have, I mentioned the stomach lesions. There's been unexplained deaths. There's been problems in the development of liver cells and kidneys and stomach, and also kidney lesions and liver lesions, and problems in the development of blood cells, white and red blood cells, higher blood sugar levels, problems in the size of the liver. A lot of problems that haven't been explained, and typically they're explained away or rationalized away and approved anyway. Now, we also have anecdotal evidence, and about 25 farmers in the Midwest say that when they feed certain varieties of genetically modified corn to their pigs, the pigs develop reproductive problems. They either are sterile or have false pregnancies or give birth to bags of water. And this has been found over and over again. Every time this one farmer gets on TV or radio, another three or four farmers call and say, you know, I have the same problem and I use the same kind of corn.
You had an anecdote in your book, Jeffrey Smith, Seeds of Deception, about Al Gore on the campaign trail coming to a group of farmers in the Midwest anyway, and he was touting the benefits of genetically modified food, and a farmer came up and said, you know, my animals don't like it. And one of the fun things about your book, in every chapter at the beginning, you have, you know, the wise goose who won't eat the genetically modified corn, or the wise pig, or the cattle that'll go away from the field that's got the genetically modified organisms and just make sure it gets to the ones that are not genetically modified organisms. And Gore didn't know what to do, basically.
Right.
And so he asked, does any other farmer here have the same experience? And yes, several other farmers said, in fact, they did. It just showed how out of touch he was. I'm wondering, on this question of labeling, why is it that we can't find out whether these things are GMO or not?
It's because the agencies in the U.S. government that are supposedly in charge of regulating genetically engineered foods are actually mandated with the job of promoting it. So the Food and Drug Administration, which should be the agency to label this, in fact, according to the law, it should have been tested, required to have long testing like a drug, and be labeled. But they got around it illegally, in my opinion. And they actually did their own focus tests. And they know that the U.S. citizen wants these foods labeled. In fact, a poll said 92% of Americans wants GM food labeled. And they ask, why do you want it labeled? And most people say, because I want to avoid it. And so they realize that if they mandated labeling, companies would remove the GM ingredients before labeling started so that they wouldn't have these skull and crossbones, so to speak, and that would actually help topple the industry. But the biotech industry is basically promoted by the U.S. government, both in the United States and around the world.
Wasn't there an effort at Congress level to make sure that they did label them?
Oh, yeah. Kucinich has introduced legislation, the Right to Know Act, a number of times, and there's been a number of co-sponsors. But it's been shot down each time because of the, in this case, the Republicans have lobbied against it. But there's a very strong corporate control here. You see, the biotech industry spend about $50 million a year promoting their technology in the human, in the general population, but they spend a lot more lobbying Washington, about $141 million in 1 year. And so, for example, under the Clinton administration, there was a Secretary of Agriculture, Dan Glickman, who reveals the effectiveness of this lobbying campaign. He said, what I saw generically from the probiotic side was the attitude that the technology was good and that it was almost immoral to say that it wasn't good because it was going to solve the problems of the human race and feed the hungry and clothe the naked. And if you're against it, you're Luddites, you're stupid. And that's frankly what the side our government was on. So this was a senior official in the White House indicating the effectiveness that it was, they felt like it was almost disloyal to have an open-minded view.
He went off script there, and you say a lot of people in the White House weren't happy with that, and you was worried that he was going to lose his job, but he bumped into Hillary Clinton, and she said, I read about your speech. He must have been scared about what you was going to say next, but she said, I liked it, and
yes.
Then he knew he was going to keep
That's
his
right.
job.
That's right.
But what about the general claim that Glickman was referring to there as it relates to the third world and solving the problem of hunger worldwide? Because that, when you hear these companies give their pitch or one of their defenders, their apologists, that's what tugs at the heartstrings, that there are all these people, millions, billions of people, maybe 2 or 3 billion people in the world who don't have enough food to eat every day, and then they hold out the possibility of genetically modified organisms as a way to feed the hungry in Africa or in Asia or in Latin America. Is that a false hope? Is there some grain of truth, if you'll excuse the pun, to that?
It's actually a public relations spin that turns out to be very dangerous for feeding the world. Those who study this issue realize, first of all, there's more food per person today than any time in human history, and we still have 800 million people who are hungry.
Well, how can that be, though?
It's because of, it's not productivity that is the basic fundamental of why we have hunger. It's economics and distribution and political will. Typically in a famine area, a lot of food leaves the area because there's no market for it, and so businessmen send food out of the area, which is a shame. It turns out that if we think of just increasing productivity as the magic bullet, it can divert resources away from the more significant means for combating hunger, which is effective in many areas, but it's not simply increasing productivity. Now, it also turns out that the average genetically modified crop actually reduces yield. So it doesn't actually provide increased productivity, even if that were to be effective. It's a very dangerous and a very effective public relations campaign, because then we say, well, who are we in this society to stop a technology which can help to feed the world? But actually, it can be far worse as a means to feed the world. And I'll give you an example. In Africa, there was a famine in southern Africa, and 5 countries were going to receive food aid from the United States, and it was going to come in the form of corn. And about 40% of the corn was genetically engineered. And Zambia said, five countries said, we don't want genetically engineered food. And the U.S. government said, tough. Either you take our genetically engineered food or starve. And so a couple of countries said, well, at least mill it into flour so that our farmers won't plant it. And the U.S. said, no, tough, either take it whole or starve. And the South African government bailed out and did the milling, but Zambia actually refused because they sent a delegation to the United States and to Europe and evaluated the safety studies that had been done on genetically engineered foods and realized it was way too risky to feed their starving people genetically engineered corn, and so they were able to find other aid and other food to feed them.
And the way that played here in the United States, though, was look at how stupid those Zambians are, or look at how hoodwinked they are about how bad GMOs are, when in fact the propagandists said, you know, there's nothing wrong with this, and they've just been, you know, bamboozled by the anti-globalization people of the world.
So let me give you a justification for why this rejection was appropriate. First of all, most of the genetically modified corn is engineered to produce a pesticide called BT. Now, here's what we know about BT. Not a lot. First of all, 39 Filipinos living next to a BT cornfield developed skin, respiratory, and intestinal reactions and fever while the corn was pollinating, while they were breathing in the pollen. Blood tests also show that they had an immune response to this BT. Farm workers also exposed to the spray, which is in a much, much more small concentration of this toxin, also exhibited allergic response symptoms. When mice were fed the BT, they developed abnormal and excessive cell growth in their digestive tract. They developed an immune response equal to cholera toxin. And this BT is in the corn we eat. Now, suppose that the gene from the corn also were to transfer to our gut bacteria, as was demonstrated by in soybeans, genetically modified soybeans. That means that eating genetically modified BT corn could end up turning our intestinal flora into living pesticide factories. Now think of the Zambians who were starving, who if they received food aid, 90% of their caloric intake would be the corn from the United States. Whereas here in the United States, we only eat 3 to 5% of our caloric intake. So we would be exposing them to an enormous amount of this toxin, which could end up lodging inside their own digestive tract. So I think it was a very wise decision to turn down this genetically modified corn and substitute it for non-genetically modified food.
As one of the scientists in your book, Jeffrey Smith, says, you know, we should keep the guinea pigs in the laboratory and not make the guinea pigs everybody else outside of the lab. It's Progressive Radio you're listening to. My guest is Jeffrey Smith. He's the author of Seeds of Deception, exposing industry and government lies about the safety of the genetically engineered foods you're eating. Jeffrey, could you give us your website before we continue?
Sure. It's www.seedsofdeception.com. That's seedsofdeception.com. And you can click over to our other website, which is gmfreeschools.org, to learn about our attempts to remove these genetically modified foods from school meals.
Well, why don't you pick up from there and tell us what you're doing in the schools?
Well, first of all, kids are most at risk from the genetically modified varieties. They have young, developing bodies. They process food differently, so toxins and allergens and nutritional problems will have a much more severe impact on their body and their life. And so I've created a DVD and VHS called Hidden Dangers in Kids' Meals, Genetically Engineered Foods, and that's being made available to alert parents and school systems to the dangers. It's got many scientists on there. In fact, several scientists who've been threatened or lost their job because of their critical opinions or because they have discovered incriminating evidence. One of my favorites was a UC Berkeley professor who says he was threatened by a senior Mexican government official who implied, "We know where your children go to school," trying to get him not to publish incriminating evidence.
One of the interesting and frightening aspects of this book, Jeffrey, is the problem that several people have, whether they're scientists or regulators or consumer advocates or journalists even, the negative repercussions they've gotten. They've been censored, they've been fired, they've been threatened. Have you received any harassment because of the work you've been doing?
No, I haven't. There's an attempt to ignore the work that I've been doing, although fortunately it hasn't been their attempts haven't been effective. The book is now the number one selling critique of genetically engineered foods in the world, and it's actually affected policy in many areas. As far as the firings, it's interesting. I mentioned with the initial approvals of recombinant bovine growth hormone injected into cows to increase milk supply, Monsanto's product, that even within the U.S. government, within the FDA, scientists who expressed concern about the potential human health impacts from the dairy products were fired, stripped of responsibilities, or forced out. The remaining whistleblowers had to write an anonymous letter to Congress claiming that there was fraud and conflict of interest in the Food and Drug Administration.
Same thing in Canada, too, happened, which, you know, down here sometimes we think it's much more enlightened up there. But the pressure from the companies exerted itself in Canada as well.
Exactly. And the six scientists there testified before the Canadian Senate that they had been pressured to approve RBGH, that documents were stolen from a locked file cabinet, and that Monsanto even offered them a bribe of $1 to $2 million to approve it without further study. Now, Monsanto responded by going on national Canadian television and saying that the scientists had obviously misunderstood an offer for research money. Now, at the same time, we find now that Monsanto was also bribing Indonesian government officials, 140 of them, to try and get their genetically modified cotton approved without an environmental assessment. And they just got fined $1.5 million for that discovery.
Go back to the schools a second, because there's the lovely example that you write about up here in my home state of Wisconsin in Appleton. A school district had decided to rid itself of food that was harmful.
Right. You see, a nutritionist who had been a probation officer realized how effective changing the diet was in improving behavior, because so many people have this impulsive, aggressive, and mood swing behavior associated with processed foods and additives. And there's a lot of research to back that up. So she and her husband that run the Natural Ovens Bakery offered to pay for their own employee to come and cook in the school and to supply fresh, natural, whole foods. And the behavior of the kids changed dramatically from an out-of-control high school to an orderly high school, where there used to be weapons violations and a cop on duty full-time, and now the teacher says the biggest problem is parking in the parking lot or student tardiness. Now, it turns out when you remove a lot of the processed foods or all the processed foods like they did, you tend to remove the genetically modified foods as well. And they had removed almost all the genetically modified ingredients when they did this experiment. It's been going on for 7 years now. And they actually spend less money now as a school district on their food than they did when they were using processed foods, because there's less waste, more kids are using it. And they also said that the other ways that it increases money, the less vandalism, the less litter, the more orderliness, is a much bigger response in terms of the budget.
What do you tell the rest of us outside of the Appleton School District on how to change our habits so that we don't consume so much genetically modified food?
Well, first of all, if you go to the site seedsofdeception.com or look at the book, you'll have a list of reminding you which foods are genetically engineered. And it's important to memorize a little bit of some of the derivatives of soy and corn, because if it doesn't say organic, and if it doesn't say non-GMO, if it has soy or corn or canola oil or cottonseed oil, then you can assume it's genetically engineered. I would suggest that people either buy organic, then you get the added benefit of not using the pesticides and herbicides, or buy products that say non-GMO, or become a label reader. Now, within a couple of weeks, maybe a month, you'll be able to identify which brands you need to switch over. So if you buy a tomato sauce, for example, you look at the brand. Some have soybean oil and high fructose corn syrup, both genetically engineered. You can put that back on the shelf and find one that has olive oil or no oil, and that becomes your new brand. So you stock your own home with products that are not genetically engineered. And then when you go out to eat, you can ask the simple question, what kind of oil do you use? If they say vegetable oil, you can say, well, do you have olive oil? Can you cook something for me in olive oil or no oil? Then you can avoid the soy, corn, cotton, and canola.
So it is possible.
I've been a living example of that for many years.
Oh, you look pretty healthy. Jeffrey Smith, thanks for being my guest today. And thank you all for listening. If you want to hear the show again in its entirety, you can download it at our website, progressive.org. Till next time, I'm Matt Rothschild.
Today's program is available online at progressive.org. You can also write to us at 409 East Main Street, Madison, Wisconsin, 53703. Our music is by Mufa. Progressive Radio is produced by Elizabeth DiNovella and engineered at Audio for the Arts in Madison, Wisconsin.